I am Judith McKay, and this is Voices and Views. And today I'm talking with Mara Pearl, a local author and an international author. And she would like to share her story and with the Milford Haven series that she began a number of years ago. And welcome to the show, Mara.
Thank you, Judith. So nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Would you like to tell us about how the Milford Haven series began?
I would love to. I hope we have several days to talk. I will shorten the story as best I can. So I came from a theater family, but I also have always loved to write. And eventually I became what's known in Los Angeles as a hyphenate. It's a blessing and sort of a curse, too, in that you really love to do more than one thing. So when I was growing up, well-meaning people would say, you really should give up everything except blank. But when I would try to do that, let's say stop acting, well, that would be the week I would get offered a marvelous part. And then, okay, no more acting, you know, but then I'd say, okay, no more writing. And then that would be the week there'd be some marvelous opportunity to write something. So I continued to do both and had wonderful experiences in both. I did a lot of acting, I did a lot of writing, and I started both of these quite early. My first job on a television series started when I was about 8 or 9, and my first job as a journalist started when I was 14. So, of course, I was learning and working with wonderful mentors in both of these arenas. I eventually wound up in Los Angeles, and I worked at my writing, and I also got hired to be an actress on Days of Our Lives. I was surprised to be doing that job on a soap because I thought soap opera was kind of a lesser form. I was classically trained in Shakespeare, after all, and soap opera has silly storylines and hyperbole and so forth. But what I found was I worked with fantastic people. I learned a lot from working on the show, and I got interested in this longer form of storytelling where you follow a character for a much longer arc. Well, I was then invited to do a fantastic play that I loved called Sea Marks by Gardner McKay, and I was invited to do it in a little town called Cambria, which is on the central coast of California. It's about halfway between L.A. and San Francisco.
I think we've been there.
Near the Hearst Castle.
Yeah, oh yes.
Right.
Beautiful area.
It is. It's a gorgeous part of the country. And so while I was doing this play at night, during the day I was exploring the little town, and I thought, gee, this could be a great microcosm for storytelling. And I had never lived in a little town. You know, it so happens that I grew up in Tokyo, 11 million people at the time. Then I lived in New York City. Then I lived in Los Angeles. So for me, going to a little town was something like visiting a foreign country. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how do people live here? And I got kind of fascinated by that. Well, this is ticking over in the back of my mind. And when I left Cambria to return to LA, I began to work on the soap. Then I thought, maybe I could write my own soap and base it loosely on Cambria. So then I began to look for a name. Well, Cambria is a Welsh name. And I began looking at the map, and I found some interesting names in Wales. And then I was in a Shakespearean production of Cymbeline, and my character receives a letter from her beloved, and it says, "Meet me in Cambria in Milford Haven."
Oh, my goodness.
And that was one of the names I had seen on the map, and I just knew that was it.
That just clicked with
you. It clicked, yes. So I began creating my characters and situations and called on other actor friends, many of whom were also doing different soap operas, and said, would you take a flyer with me? I don't know if I'll ever sell the show. If I do, of course, I'll pay you, but I can't until then. And a lot of friends did say yes. So we were off to the races. I found a great little recording studio in LA, which became the home of the show, a fabulous engineer with whom I still work named Bill Bercuda. And we started. And we got on the air in Cambria, and we were a hit. which was very fun and exciting.
Oh, lovely.
All local. And then I thought, okay, it's working here, but it should work here because it's local interest. What would happen if I got the show on the air in a completely different locale? Well, I found out that Rochester, New York is a big city for test marketing products. So I flew there, rented a car, drove around, found a little local radio station, talked my way in there, and we went on the air. And we had, the ratings were as good there as they had been in Cambria.
What do you suppose?
Well, finger on the pulse, you know, writing about life in a little town, dealing with basically iconic story elements, realistic characters. It just resonated.
A connection.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It worked. Mm-hmm. So that was repeated. I got it on the air in a few more places. And then I thought, okay, now I've got a body of evidence. I have, 50 shows in the can. I've got ratings in various places. So I began to approach syndicators. Well, the syndicator people said, gee, did you notice that radio drama died before you were born? I said, yeah, I did notice that, but I also noticed the ratings. So maybe it's time to bring radio drama back. They said, well, we'll check the numbers. And I'm thinking, what numbers can you check? Since there is no radio drama on the air. They came back to me and they said, ooh, the numbers are bad. And I said, no, the numbers are zero. That's why they appear to be bad, but it's actually zero. Anyway, we had this terrible, circular, nonsensical catch-22 conversation, kind of going nowhere. In the meanwhile, there was the NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, annual conference. I took a booth. I'm standing there repeating the same words all day for 3 days. At the end of the conference, these guys came around the corner pointing at me, and I said, may I help you? And they said, call this woman. She's been trying to find you. So she was Pat Ewing, the head of Radio 5 for the BBC.
Oh, my goodness.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I called Miss Ewing, and she said, well, there you are, And within 2 weeks, Milford Haven became the first American radio serial ever contracted by the BBC.
Who would ever guess?
Oh, you couldn't possibly, it's stranger than fiction. If I had written that into a storyline, it would have been too unrealistic, right?
No kidding.
Yeah.
Amazing how things happen, how the connections work, the networking, just connections, just showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And following your instinct.
Yes.
Your intuition.
Which I saw a quote as you said that. I'd like to just share that and for your response. It said, ideas pull the trigger, but instinct loads the gun.
Oh, that's great.
By Don Marquis, an
I
American
like that.
Poet.
Mm,
as
very
you
good.
Said that.
Yeah, perfect.
Do you feel that way?
Yes. In fact, what I'm writing now, I would say, is all about a journey of head and heart, which we could say is logic and intuition.
Which you need both.
You really do. And I think in our culture, we tend to ignore intuition. We call it a silly feeling.
A feminine feeling.
Some people would say that.
They would,
but you talk yourself out of it. You'll have the feeling, I should call that person now, but, I better continue with my work. Or, I shouldn't take that road. And something says, oh, that's ridiculous. So retraining ourselves to consider that both the logical and the intuitive information we're receiving are equally valid.
Extremely so.
Yeah.
And we need to pay strong attention to both of them, don't we?
I really believe so. And that's what my novel series is about, essentially. It's about characters who are on that journey from head to heart. Some are resisting it. Some are embracing it. But each character finds themselves somewhere along that continuum. So when you read my novels, you can use it as pure escape and just say, oh, good, I don't have to think about my own problems for a while. I can just think about theirs. On the other hand, you can allow those stories to resonate within yourself and consider, well, where am I on that journey? Am I doing in my heart of hearts what I always thought I should do? Or am I not? And if not, why not? And if not now, when?
Good. those basic questions, those mm-hmm. basic fundamental questions that so many of us, including myself, take with me on my journey. The yeah. questions keep showing up, don't they, throughout this journey that we have.
They do. Yes, it's not something you answer once and for all.
No.
It's always good to ask yourself again, is this where I belong? Is this what I should be doing?
That's one of the things about reading a good fiction book, too. There is usually morality and questions like that, fundamental questions that show up in a good story.
Or I agree. Makes us think, makes us feel.
It does. And that's what a good story is all about. I'm excited to read your next book.
Thank you. So this journey, we went on the air on the BBC, and of course we were all excited about that. But we didn't know whether it would work or not. We were going to be up against, I think, the finest dramas in the world are on the BBC.
Yes.
So a few weeks in, Pat Ewing called from London, and she said, you might like to pop over. It's doing rather well.
I love it.
And I thought, what does rather well mean? You know, she said 4.5 million listeners. Wow. So I had 4.5 listeners in the States, and I had 4.5 million listeners. I thought, never mind American syndication. We're going to focus on England, mm-hmm. on the UK.
Absolutely.
So I did a press tour, went to London, and meanwhile, the original town of Milford Haven had heard about my show, and they invited me to Wales.
Oh, my goodness.
So I took this 5-hour train ride to the end of the line, and by then it was late at night, pitch black, the doors open, and a disembodied voice says, is that Mara Pearl? Yes. Suddenly these lights come on, kaboosh, and I'm photographed absolutely everywhere I go. The following day, they had arranged a parade for me down the main street of the little town of Milford Haven.
Oh,
extraordinary.
My goodness.
Then they had a reception for me. I walked under crossed swords. There was a gentleman in a powdered wig who rang me into the room. These are traditions from the 1700s. Well, fortunately, I'd had a tray engraved that said, from Milford Haven to Milford Haven, so I had something to give them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I have my own town, obviously, in Wales.
Who would ever guess?
They are the most lovely, lovely people. I stay in touch with them. I have visited again. I am also doing research to do a historical story that will actually tie together the various Milford Havens, of which there are several.
Oh, are there?
Yes. So Milford Haven is a coastal town in Wales, and in the 1600s, they were in the whaling business. Those ships plied all the oceans of the world and on their way founded places like Milford, Connecticut, Milford Haven, Virginia, Milford, New Zealand. So I'm working on a story that will tie together the early versions of these original towns.
And you could take your story around the world, Milford Haven.
Mm-hmm.
Here we come.
Yes, exactly.
How exciting. Broaden the character's horizons.
Yes, and again, when you're writing about essential human truths, they recur. So yes, my town is a coastal town in California, but it could also be a coastal town on any coast.
Absolutely.
So what draws a person to a place like that? I think what I enjoy writing about with my characters is people having a vision, some kind of a dream, and getting on with it, rather than staying in what they have been doing or what they thought they were supposed to do or what their families wanted them to do or in the safety of a corporate job. I don't know that corporate jobs are safe anymore. And in fact, Joseph Campbell, who was one of my mentors, I worked for Joseph and his wife in their theater in New York years ago.
Oh my goodness, you met Joseph Campbell. Oh
Indeed.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy his readings.
Yes. Marvelous. Marvelous.
What an opportunity.
Yeah, it really
for
was.
You.
Yep. And he and his wife Jean did extraordinary productions and were these highly creative, imaginative people. But Joseph said his whole follow your bliss recommendation came from this advice to notice when you do something that feels good to you. And he said that could be the opening of your path. Your path opening may not be the ringing of a big gong. It may be a more quiet sensation of, gee, I really liked that. And Joseph would say, do that again, pursue that. So if you choose, let's say, what you believe is safe, it could crumble. And then you have neither what you love nor what you thought was safe. Whereas if you pursue what you love, you will always have that. And that's a bigger safety than something external that's promised to you by circumstances.
So very
well
put.
Isn't that fantastic?
So very well put. Yes, and that's so true. Looking back on my journey, and I think feeling the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a journey, it's a process, too, of learning those truths, too, along the way.
And it may require tremendous courage. And that courage may look like tremendous foolishness. When I was embarking on what later would become Milford Haven, I had a great job as a journalist in New York City, and I got this internal call. It's time to move. It's time to move to California. It's time to return to your performing roots. It's time to do something creative. And my boss thought I was crazy. My dad thought I was crazy and tried to talk me out of it. And I really listened to my heart. And I went ahead and gave up everything that seemed safe and wonderful in New York. And I loved New York and I loved my jobs there. But this really was a calling and I did respond to it. So that's the journey that I share now through my novels.
Good for you. I can speak to that too. I was offered a job out of the clear blue, and you know what we're talking about, out of the clear blue, to go to England
mm-hmm.
when I was a young single professional gal. Got a call from personnel saying, we've just received a cable offering you this position. I was very ensconced in family, neighborhood, community, da-da-da-da-da. But I knew as soon as that call came, I just knew that I would go. There was no question. I didn't know anyone over there, but I just knew. But what I want to share, as you're just saying in your story, when I told my cohorts at work about it, there were two distinct responses, and you would know what they are. One was, oh my gosh, that scares me to death. I don't know anyone over there. How can you leave your da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da?
Yes.
How could you do that? And then the other extreme response was, go, girl. Can
exactly.
I go with you? What an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget that. So it's just the same as you're saying. Do we want to stay in that box and live in that quote, safe box?
Well,
or
and
step
as
out?
Yes, right. And as we go forward, if we have responded to that call, it may be that the call will repeat itself in more advanced ways. We gain mastery in the field in which we're working. We may stay in that field. We may mentor other people who wouldn't get it and get their moment unless we helped them to it. That can be very thrilling. One thing will lead to another, and you don't know what that path will be, but by continuing to cultivate listening to your intuition, I believe, you'll have a fantastic experience. We've got a guidance system if we'll just use it, learn to use it.
And honor it.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention. And that's what the journey is all about, is honoring our gifts, honoring who we really are, paying attention, listening.
Well,
and it sounds like that's what you're doing.
I'm trying, yeah. After Milford Haven was a success and we had this great experience with the radio show, interestingly, I had learned a whole new skill set that I hadn't had before. And one of the things I did was write a curriculum to teach high school and college students how to create a radio drama. I wound up teaching as a guest in multiple schools in California, Colorado, and Alaska for a number of years. And the way television and cinema is structured, you really learn a lot of the basics by doing radio, because you learn story structure, the beats within a scene, the arc of the story, the plot points, all the important things you need to know about writing any kind of a script. You can really begin to learn that in radio. So that was fantastic. And you know how you learn even more when you teach.
Yes.
And I worked with marvelous students. In fact, I went back to my old school in Tokyo and taught a few radio drama courses there, which was great fun. I wrote Tokyo Time Travelers with my students in Japan.
Well, fun.
But then I also got an offer to start developing my story for narrative voice for novels. And I knew when I was a little girl I wanted to write a novel, but I also knew I wasn't ready. You know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I just wasn't ready to sit down and write a novel. So there came that moment when I knew I was ready. But I didn't know anything about writing narrative voice, really. I knew how to write dialogue. So my first draft was just terrible. It was dialogue, 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 a little bit of description, and then back to the dialogue. And I worked with mentors, and I read and read and studied and grew and learned until my novels began to really have a voice of their own. So it is the same characters who were in the radio drama, but the story has much more depth and detail that I couldn't fit into a radio drama. So now I recently won my 29th book award, which is sort of astonishing. I love how hard it is, what it calls me to do in research and in listening and in the discipline of putting the words on the page, and then the joy of sharing it.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's exciting as you continue to keep writing.
Yes, I've set myself a pretty big task list. I finally have a new book coming out next fall, and I'm writing a pentology. You know, how do you take 100 radio episodes and how many books does that become? I wasn't going to write 100 books. It wasn't going to be 50 books. Anyway, out of the core of the story came the number 5, because I have a journalist in the story, and journalists ask who, what, when, where, why.
Yes.
So the titles of the books each begin with one of those words. So book 1 is What the Heart Knows.
Oh, I'll look forward to reading those too.
Thank you.
So then beyond the 5, then where do you plan on going?
If there's still interest in the story from me and from readers, I have probably another 5 I would like to do. There's more to the story. I'm focusing on the primary characters in these 5, and then there are secondary characters who are already present in the story. I would continue to expand, you know, them. But I also write short stories that fit in between the novels, and each of them takes me and my readers into the more private world of one character at a time. And those are really fun.
Now, are those separately published?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are those called?
First one is When Hummers Dream. It's about an interesting experience I had with a hummingbird. The next one is When Whales Watch, and I'm an avid environmentalist and was on a voyage years ago to save whales. But I always wanted to write a story about sperm whales when they were not being hunted. So I researched the story for a couple of years and wrote an adventure story about sperm whales. That was really a joy to write that. The short story I'm doing right now is about sea otters.
And oh my goodness.
I thought they were just cute, but they're very political. They're at the center of a huge political situation. So the research on that story is kind of fascinating.
I bet that's taken you quite a few places, hasn't it?
It has.
What's next on your agenda?
Writing, writing, writing. Doing a play next fall in which I'll be portraying Julia Morgan, who was the architect who created the Hearst Castle. And I also work with other writers. I do quite a bit of speaking at writer conferences, and I love mentoring and coaching people with their writing projects.
You were just at the Mountain of Authors Day.
Yes.
Recently, weren't
yes.
you?
Yes. What a great event. Pikes Peak Library annual event. They highlight local authors, and that connection between local authors and our own library and local readers is so exciting and dynamic.
Thank goodness. I mean, that's such a blessing for this community, and as PPLD and all of its wisdom and energy and education, I think, continues to just reach out across the country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
It's so innovative.
It's one of the great library systems that we have in the country. Very, very impressive what they mm-hmm. do.
And how they so support community. And so I'm glad you were here to be a part of that.
Same here. Very honored.
So you spend some time in Colorado Springs and
yes,
sometimes in LA then.
Mm-hmm. We have, my husband and I have a home here, and I kept my Los Angeles place because I do a lot of research, writing, events in California as well.
Two different worlds.
Yes and no.
So do you have a preference, or do you like them?
Love them both.
Similarities and differences that make them exciting and to go keep going back and forth and just keep learning and connecting.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you go to either place, there's something new, isn't there?
That's right. That's right. They both inspire me.
How many Milford Haven books have you written so far?
There are five, including the short stories, two holiday short stories that are out that feature my characters. So quite a few more to come.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And are they in the library system too?
They are. Yes, and they're available in hardcover, softcover, and ebook, and audiobook.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. So a number of resources for your book. I'm glad to hear that. And what other words of wisdom would you like to share?
That the artist's journey is one of the most important parts of life, in my opinion. And I'm not sure that it gets equal value in our education system or in our society at large. So I'm eager to help other artists, and I'm eager to help everyone get what the value is of having this lens. Story is a lens through which you can examine the deepest issues of life. The unexamined life doesn't necessarily resonate with its own core values. So it would be fun to talk with you about that.
I would thoroughly enjoy that. It sounds like a very interesting subject. Mara, is there any other way that people can learn more about you and what you do?
My website is marapearl.com, and my name is spelled M-A-R-A. My last name is P-U-R-L, so marapearl.com. And I am on Facebook and Twitter and social media, and I do events and I blog. And so there are, you know, ways to find me online. And I love visiting book clubs. If people enjoy discussing something with an author, either in person or by phone.
That's exciting and so very important, because there's so many important things that you're sharing about how we go about our journey and just things to learn along the way. So thanks, Mara Pearl.
Thank you, Judith.